Welcome back, folks. Third hour of the War Room is on. Still got a lot of stories to cover. I don't know. Last time I opened up phone calls, I didn't get to very many. I felt bad. I guess something broke right as I did. But I got a lot to talk. We'll open up phone lines in the next segment, and then we'll go to phone calls. So I'll try to bottom half of this hour. But I want to continue with Tucker Carlson because he made some other points that you'll recognize if you're a regular viewer of InfoWars. Let's go to clip number 15. This is Tucker Carlson calling out Ben Shapiro and others like him, like Mark Levin, for clearly just not giving a damn about the American people. Let's watch.
You want people to follow you? You want to sell your ideas to them? You want to convince them that what you're saying is true? Show some love for them. Demonstrate that you love, that you care about them. Why are we doing this? Because we think it's better for you. Shapiro and all of these guys, they don't make an effort to do that because they don't feel that way at all. Shut up, cattle. You're a Nazi. Give us the money for our preferred little country, or else we're going to denounce you. Man, those attitudes are incompatible with leadership and, in fact, with democracy itself. You can't have a country of 350 million people governed by boutique goals and concerns. I really care so much about this thing, and you better care about it too, or else I'm going to attack you and deplatform you. It doesn't work. It's illegitimate, actually. And if you keep it up, you're flirting with, you know, real backlash, like a real one. Not Nick Fuentes, like a real one. So cool it. Listen to other people. Don't treat them like cattle. Treat them like human beings.
Again, very, very reminiscent of the argument I've been making the whole time and the position I approached this topic from the entire time. And again, it's one of the frustrating parts about people just not listening to you or believing you. Where, like, in the beginning, when Israel was bombing Gaza and I mean, the bombs they were dropping on hospitals and stuff already was like, okay, this is kind of outrageous. But just projecting forward, going, all right, all of Hamas is in tunnels. Israel doesn't have the manpower to go into the tunnels. All they can do is bomb, but the bombings don't hurt the tunnels. So all they're going to do is kill innocent people. And if they want to take over Gaza like they say they do, they're just going to have to bomb a block, move in, bomb a block, move in. Like, that's going to be devastating. This is not a fight that's going to be worth it. This is going to cost a ton of money, a ton of lives. The brutality will be extreme, and they won't even be able to achieve their goals in the first place. They shouldn't do this. What do you think the response was? Gee, you're right, Harrison. For the sake of Israel, we should chill. No, like, obviously not, right? It's shut up, anti-Semite. Why are you on Hamas's side? So you think it's okay that they killed Jews on October 7th? Like, these ridiculous things. And yet here we are, 2 years later, Israel is in the most precarious situation it's ever been in. Their president can't go to Europe without getting arrested. And everybody in America has turned against him. Everybody under 50, at least. So maybe instead of calling us anti-Semites for our correct predictions about how Israeli actions would be perceived, why don't you try to listen every once in a while? But originally what Tucker was talking about was this idea that the leadership of this country genuinely despises the people. And this is a topic that I got into with Alex last year, perhaps it was the year before, clip 10. Here's me explaining noblesse oblige, something we have lost in this country.
Trump should be talking about his persecution more. Attorney General, but it shows what an optimist he is. He's not even talking about himself, Harrison.
No. Well, he's got the classic sense of noblesse oblige, right? The obligation of the nobles. The idea back when you had nobles was like, all right, you get to live in a castle, you get to be fed, you don't have to work. But when the invasion comes, it's your ass in the armor with the sword going out and putting your life on the line to defend us. It was an obligation. The nobles got all these privileges.
Exactly. You can be an aristocrat, which means you lead from the front.
Right. And so now the people in power now, the elite.
Say that again in the French. That's
noblesse oblige. Yeah.
Or is that Latin?
I don't even know. I think it's Latin, but it's the obligation of the nobles. It's the obligation the nobles are supposed to feel for the people under them because, you know, when it was the King of England and he had all the power, if England did well, he did well. It was just, you know, he had no incentive
to
French,
not to sell out
his
Latin.
That was a mistake by me. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Harrison, I am so excited to talk to you. I want to plug the Irish Steam Off was a big game changer for me. I was having a lot of like thermoregulation issues, like morning severe chills and cold in the morning. Hmm. All that stopped with the Steam Off because it's a thyroid issue, and the Steam Off has that iodine to heal your thyroid.
Isn't that amazing?
The Methylene Blue. Yeah, the Methylene Blue, life-changing. I love it. I don't need caffeine anymore. It's amazing, but I'm trying to be quick.
It's all right. Hey, when you're plugging, we got all the time in the world.
I loved his supplement formula. I am an acupuncturist. I have a master's degree in Chinese medicine, and he's got some really good formulas put together, and they work really well. I really appreciate it. I stopped taking all of my other stuff that I was taking, and I just take a lot of you guys' stuff. I mean, because I love you and I want to support everything you guys are doing, but the formulas are good.
You can only find out for yourself what effects these things will have. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at x.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I am going to open up the phone lines for your calls. We'll get to as many of them this hour as we can. Still have a little bit to a couple of news stories to cover, a couple of videos to show you. But I do want to take your calls this final hour on The War Room. Infowarsstore.com, TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison. It's how you support us. And if you want to call in about any and all topics that we've covered today, anything that we've missed, give us a call. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539. That's 1-877-789-2539. We are live this 13th of November, 2025, soliciting your calls, 1-877-789-2539. Now, there's more important things to talk about right now. Kind of. There's kind of more important things to talk about right now. For example, stuff like this. Germany calls up all men aged 18 or more for military medical exam. So we've been reporting how Germany has been increasingly flirting with the prospect of having a draft, going to war with Russia and calling up all of their young men. And it only makes sense. I mean, if you're goal is to eradicate the German population, which that seems to be the goal. War is a great way to do it. I doubt all the Turkish Syrian refugees in Germany are showing up proper and correct. Sir, yes, sir. Send me out to the front line. I doubt they're showing up. I doubt they even appear on the muster rolls. No, it'll be the Germans, particularly the ethnic Germans, who will be called away to fight and die on the front lines while their homes and jobs are filled by hostile foreigners. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. This is extremely dangerous. And yet another warning bell that the war in Europe is only increasing because of the bloodthirsty stupidity of the European leadership. So I should be spending more time on this. I should be spending a lot of time on this. Emergency conscription. So they called up all 18-year-old men for a medical examination to create a mechanism for emergency conscription after the ruling coalition ended months of squabbling over the future of national service. The country will not return to full mandatory conscription, which was suspended in 2011, but plans to expand its reserves by training up to 5,000 men each year. So again, very concerning that we are headed more towards nuclear war. Got other stuff? Apple is now release their own version of digital ID. They're calling it digital ID, saying, look how convenient it will be to be a cog in our slave system. Like, there's stuff like that that I'd like to cover. There's other stuff that would be fun to cover. Archaeologists reveal ritual objects tied to ancient biblical cult. You know, if the world weren't on fire, if the Republican Party, our last best hope of rescue in this final hour, was being ripped apart from the inside, I'd love to cover stuff like this. I'd love to tell you about the symbolic significance of the uncovering of an ancient biblical cult. Wouldn't that be fun? In Armageddon, by the way, in the hill called Armageddon. So, you know, maybe this is something we should pay attention to. Symbols are like, signs, symbols, these things, they're real. They're real, okay? I've done a long thread about that. But we're not going to talk about these things. We're going to talk about Hitler. That's right. We're going to talk about Hitler today in the year 2025. Because I want to explain how this appears to somebody who's not obsessed with Hitler. I think I have a pretty good example here. From New York Post. Adolf Hitler. This is headline news in America. One of the leading publications in America published this on their front page today in the year 2025. This is breaking news. Headline news here. Pay attention. Here it is. Adolf Hitler may have had a micro penis and just one ball. You thought he was cool, but guess what? What is this article? Like, what is the article? What is this obsession? Who is doing these studies? They studied the man's DNA, apparently, in order to determine he has a micro penis and just one ball. There's a great bit from Nick Mullen about this. Because the other thing is, they write this article once a year. About once a year, they write the same article in major national publications, reasserting once again the utterly bizarre claim that Hitler had a small penis. Okay, thanks, guys. Next in sports, right? It's just like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? There's a Channel 4 documentary about this, apparently. It says Hitler's DNA, blueprint of a dictator, which I think is actually like kind of disturbing because of the things we've heard the likes of Josh Hammer say. Josh Hammer, Jewish supremacist guy, says European DNA is anti-Semitic. And here you have Channel 4, the BBC channel, making a documentary about how Hitler's DNA was evil. It made him evil. It made him a dictator. And it made his weenie small. Wow. Amazing. Powerful stuff. So in response to this, I retweeted the article with perhaps an alternative headline. Wouldn't it be a little bit weird if you logged on and you saw Reuters news being like, breaking headline news, Adolf Hitler had a giant dong. What? Why are you saying this? And it's like, wouldn't that be like kind of weird and pathetic? Like, what if instead of Reuters, what if it was like the Daily Stormer, I don't know, some Nazi publication? Like, actually, he was very well endowed. Actually, people were very impressed. And everybody said how beautiful it was. Okay, thanks. Thanks for the update, fellas. It's so weird. It's so, like, gross. Like, it's just like, what is this? Why is this on headline news in America in the year 2025? What is this psychological arrested development that we find ourselves in? And why are we still talking about it? And I hate to say it, but there's this obsession. And it is not good, and it's not healthy, and it never goes away. And it's indoctrinated into people, and it shapes the view of their world that, again, is like poisonous and kind of revealing, I think. And it's the grudge, the infinite grudge that Jews are capable of holding against empires that haven't existed in 2,000 years. Like, it's weird. I find it weird. Okay? I would find it weird if it was, like, wouldn't it be odd if you came to Texas and met somebody who hated Mexico because of the Texas Revolution? Wouldn't that be kind of weird? Wouldn't you think that person has got weird priorities? Like, I'll talk trash about it. I'll explain that Santa Anna was a dictator. all celebrate the heroism of the Texas revolutionaries who fought back and won against all odds. Like, it's a beautiful story. I love it. I am a little bit obsessed with it. But, like, even I am not holding a grudge against the Mexican people for the actions of Santa Anna. And that was only 180 years ago, let alone 2,500. And I'm saying this again, not to smear all Jewish people or anything, but this is a phenomenon that's fairly common and deeply troubling to me. We've talked about it before with people like Eric Weinstein, internet dark web intellectual. He goes to the Arch of Titus and flips it off. It's like, that's weird, man. That's very weird. You're holding a 2,000-year-old grudge? Get over it, I think. So what you should do is get over it. I bring this up because a video has been published recently of Benjamin Netanyahu talking about which book he's reading at the moment. And it reveals this mindset that, again, is troubling in anybody, but is particularly disturbing in the leader of Israel, who has carried out a genocide over the last 2 years against a largely disarmed and defeated foe. Let's go to clip number 13 here. This is Benjamin Netanyahu about what book he is reading before he goes to bed at night. Let's watch.
We want to know what you're reading now.
What I'm reading?
Yeah.
It's a book by a historian by the name of Barry Strauss called The Jews Against Rome. Jews Against Rome.
What made you pick it up?
Well, we lost that one. I think we have to win the next one.
Jews Against Rome. We lost that one. We'll need to win the next one. Dude, you're Polish. Bro, you are from Poland. What are you talking about? Honestly, the Poles have a lot to hate the Roman Empire for, too. So do the Germans. But why would you hold a grudge 2,000 years ago? What type of mindset is it that sees that conflict still going on? You want to talk about arrested development. And it's especially weird because it's like, in the mind of Benjamin Netanyahu, warmonger, prime minister of Israel, he is waging an existential civilizational war that's the same war they've been waging for 2,000 years against the same enemies, Rome, the Catholic Church, European power structures. You know, a lot's happened in between now and then. You know that, right? You know, a lot of big wars have been fought. I mean, it's just crazy. But, you know, this is like a very key component of the Israeli mindset. Who was the first president of Israel? Their report's named after him, Ben-Gurion, right? Well, just like every other PM of Israel, he also had a distinctly Polish name before he changed it to Ben-Gurion. Ben-Gurion being, I believe, one of the Maccabees who fought, I believe, against were the Maccabees fighting the Greeks, I think. I can't quite remember which conflict it was, but it was the mountain where they all died. You know, that scene in the Sopranos. Actually, we should have brought in the Sopranos scene. Guys, bring in the Sopranos scene where they're beating up the Jewish guy, and the Jewish guys talk about Megiddo. I think it's Megiddo is what it's called. And he's like, the Jews withheld, you know, they'd rather die than give in. And, you know, where are the Romans today? Well, let's bring in that video. We'll play that after this next one. And to be honest with you, I get it to some degree. When you read accounts of like Rome versus Jerusalem, it really is like the clash of, and you know, the immovable object versus the unstoppable force. It's like this empire just pouring endless resources into trying to take this city against people that are just fighting with everything they've got and will die before they surrender and are energetic and creative and able to hold their own. Like, it's actually it's a fascinating conflict between very different people. especially I've watched an animation that sort of showed how it occurred, how the siege of Jerusalem occurred. And I mean, you get this sense of just like, because I mean, the Romans, they're just like, oh, you know, they lock the gates. Well, then we're going to build a 3-mile ramp over the wall, and they just get to work. And it's just like this endless mass of humanity, endless resources just being thrown at this small group of people in this walled city that are just like busting out at night, doing sorties, burning the siege works and getting back in using tunnels. I mean, it's crazy. It's a cool story. I'm way off track here. But the point is, the first prime minister of Israel named himself after a hero from 2000 years earlier as a, you know, direct connection. We are them, right? It would be like if I became president of Texas and renamed myself Davy Crockett. Okay. Again, we wouldn't do that. Even that would be kind of weird for us to do that. They're doing it over conflicts that happened 2,000 years ago. Why this is important now is because it helps us to understand the real motivation behind the mindset of Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's go to the next clip. This is from him talking with Mike Pompeo a little earlier. Clip 14. Keep in mind, we just heard he's reading a book called Rome versus the Jews, saying we lost it last time, but we got to win it this time. Here's what he said when he was talking with Mike Pompeo.
We had a moving visit today to the wall. I can't resist repeating this, but I'm going to. I said to the secretary that the last time Pompeo visited Jerusalem didn't end that well. But this is a different time. Rome and Jerusalem clashed over values with a great tragedy for the Jewish people. But the new Rome, the United States, views itself as a new Jerusalem.
Okay, so America is the new Rome. But it's being seen as a new Jerusalem. Maybe that's the victory condition he wants. Kind of weird, isn't it? It's funny nobody got his joke. Mike Pompeo is there. Pompey the Great. I believe it was Pompey the Great. Sieged Jerusalem during one of his campaigns. He's making a G's like, last time a person with your name came, you killed all of us. And it's like, look, you know, it's weird. It's a weird way to see the world, folks, okay? It's a poisonous way to see the world. I'm even torn a little bit about it because I love history so much. And I actually, you know, respect that Jews have this connection to their past and care about this sort of stuff. But like, it is a foreign mindset to me to not just appreciate history on an intellectual or academic level, but to actually feel like anger at the things that happened. I was watching a video. And it was two converted Jews. I think both of them were from Israel. At least one of them, you know, grew up in a kibbutz or whatever. But he's saying, you know, they're talking about the historicity of Jesus. And the one guy who's sort of more American is saying, you know, if you think Jesus Christ isn't real, if you don't think the burden of evidence has risen to the point where you're comfortable saying Jesus Christ was a real person, then you can't even say that about Alexander the Great, right? Comparing how much historical evidence for these two characters there are. It's like, well, do you believe Alexander the Great existed? Because there's more evidence for Jesus than there is for Alexander. And the other guy he was talking to, who's the guy from Israel, from the kibbutz, was like, you know, here's a better example. And he mentioned a Jewish guy kind of around the same time as Alexander. And he's like, because Jews don't care about Alexander. And that like was like, what do you mean they don't care about Alexander? He was Alexander the Great. He was like the greatest general that ever lived. He was like a demigod. He like did things that should have been impossible. And then died before most people even, you know, get their feet under them in any real way. So again, it's like, I love if you love history. I love if you feel connected to your ancestors. I got no problem with any of that. But like, you still hold a grudge against Alexander the Great and Pompey and Titus? That's weird. That's weird. And again, just like to understand how I think about this, I think what you need to do is invert it. And just like you would find it weird if there were Nazi magazines writing about how how big Hitler's member was, like, you'd be like, okay, thanks for telling us, guy. Like, it's weird. In the same way, wouldn't you think it was poisonous if somebody today was talking about what some rabbi did to white people 3,000 years ago? Wouldn't that be kind of weird? Wouldn't it be weird if, like, there was an Egyptian guy being like, the Jews, do you know what Moses did to us? You ever heard of the plagues? It's like, you're still holding a grudge over the 10 plagues of Egypt? You're messed up. You got something wrong with you. And you seem to be filled with a very deep-seated hate that you're projecting on all of us. So again, I think it explains a lot of the mindset. Because what does Netanyahu say anytime people ask him about stuff he's done? Or like when they questioned if he was responsible for Charlie Kirk's murder. He's like, these age-old anti-Semitic tropes, like we're poisoning the wells. And it's like, is this why Benjamin Netanyahu says stuff like that? Is he thinking about this stuff like that? Is he projecting that onto us? Does he really think white Christian Americans in the year 2025 are sitting there going, the Jews, you know they poisoned the wells? You know they made my great 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 grandmother sick? They're awful and we'll defeat them this time. It's like, that is such a poisonous mindset, and it would be obviously poisonous if it was inverted. But for some reason, this is like cheeky to them. It's weird. I think it's weird, personally. Now, I want to, Hitler had a gigantic dong. Let everybody know. Tell everybody. I'm going to read my thing, then I'm going to go directly out to your phone calls on the other side. I got two more little follow-up things here to talk about. One from yesterday. This is an interesting post from AF Post. Data shows U.S. college seniors studying computer science outperform their foreign counterparts by almost a standard deviation. Indian college seniors rank as the weakest performers. So when we hear about all the skills, all these wonderful skills that we need to bring in infinite Indians for, understand that every single place other than the U.S. fails to even come close to our achievement capabilities. We would literally be better off taking ninth graders out of school and training them to be coders than bringing in Indians. American ninth graders, I think, would be better equipped and more capable. But what do I know? And then we have this huge, huge support and congratulations for regular caller to InfoWars, friend of the show, Nicholas Blanchard, a.k.a. Corn Pop. Here's the article from the main wire. Corn Pop takes on Augusta School. Blanchard enters board race amid mounting controversy. Oh, mounting controversy. What is the mounting controversy they want to saddle him with? The fact that he was arrested for being at a protest? Is that controversial? Controversial for stripping at the school board meeting. Somehow it's controversial to take your clothes off at a school board meeting. Not controversial to allow men into the girls' bathroom. That's interesting. So if you're in Maine, Nicholas Blanchard Sr. has the InfoWars full-throated support, approval, and endorsement. Conservative activist Nicholas Blanchard, widely known by his online persona Corn Pop, has entered the race for Augusta School Board, stepping directly into a district roiled by months of protests, public clashes, and rising distrust between parents and school officials. Corn Pop, let him know. Let him know, Corn Pop. This is the beginning of a very strong trajectory, I believe.
You know, today is the one-year anniversary of the fake auction they had last year. The judge ordered an auction. We had groups to buy it that would keep us on air. We later sued them. I got the internal emails. The U.S. trustee of the Justice Department that intervened in my bankruptcy, where they're talking to the Democrat Party plaintiffs. So they said, we're not going to ever let him stay on air. We're just going to cancel the auction and you'll basically give it to you. But tell the judge in the world it was an auction. Remember all that? That auction was today, a year ago. How embarrassing for them. And a lot more has obviously come out, and a lot more is.
The satirical website and newspaper, The Onion, has taken over the website InfoWars of Alex Jones, the very platform that Jones used to spread horrific conspiracy theories, including those really awful false claims about the Sandy Hook shooting. Jones responded on social media today saying this.
I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to be here until they come in here and turn the lights off.
Lights off, buddy. The website shut down. This is what happens when you search for the site. Quote, unavailable till further notice. So, Ben, what is your plan for the site?
We're going to take it and take the universe that Alex created and just pave it over. We're going to create a new world where hopefully in a couple of years, if you think of InfoWars, you'll either think of this day where we pulled off this very ridiculous joke where we're able to purchase InfoWars as is.
And there is an investigation of that going on. I'll just stop there. They already know. They've been visited. But they don't care. They just go forward. And I said, you cancel the auction. This isn't a real auction. I'm going to go challenge it. And the judge wasn't corrupt and blocked them. So just remember what we've all been through and all the other stuff.
What would you control?
I mean, I really would like to control InfoWars.
No, that's a good answer.
We are listener supported by you. And I'm obviously only going to sell you stuff that really has a great effect. You buy the Patriot t-shirts with the widest selection, some of the best designs, ball caps, hoodies, sweaters. Great designs, great messages, wake people up, meet like-minded people. Discover what it's like to be Alex Jones or Donald Trump. It's a total adventure to wear. But the supplements is where I can really deliver to you. The ultramethylene blue, 99.9% of people feel it within 30 minutes. But its real effects are long-term. Cleans out your cells, energizes your body, over-the-top energy with no letdown. The highest quality, highest rated bovine colostrum. If you don't know about bovine colostrum, please research it, then know we have the best. 2,000 milligram per scoop. But the Shilajit, and Shilajit is amazing, but not all Shilajit is equal. No, it would take an hour to get into that. Research Shilajit and know we have the best. It has all these natural peptides that boost testosterone in men, make your skin glow, stamina, libido, clarity. It goes on and on. And so the new flash sale for 48 hours is Shilajit gummies. Buy one, get one free, and a free hat. Murdered out, limited edition, InfoWars ball cap, black on black. And this is the last day for the free hat. We're going to extend until tomorrow. Buy one, get one free for the Shilajit gummies. But today is the last day, this Thursday, November 13th, 2025, to get the free ball cap on top of it. That is an amazing deal. I want to thank all of you that have supported. I want to encourage those of you that have been on the fence and haven't done it. Now is the time to take action and experience how great these products are. The Irish Sea Moss, the Shilajit, the Bovine Colostrum, the Ultramethylene Blue. It's all there at thealexjonesshow.com, which I don't own. That's our sponsor, Bigly. It's financing and owns the new Alex Jones Network backup system, everything else that's happening. So it's not just critical for your health and your longevity and to experience these great products, which you need to believe me and try them. They really work. It's beyond critical in keeping this transmission on the air, which the globalists dream about getting off the air. So thank you all for your past support. I want to thank those that have taken action. TheAlexJonesStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
You want something on my chin?
You know, most guys I know would be happy to get rid of their wife. I try to explain it.
All right, we're going to play this clip. It's got this, yeah, it's The Sopranos. We should have known. All right. Should I even read this? Maybe I'll just tell you to go. Just go to my Twitter if you want to see what I think. I'm not going to read. Maybe I'll do a standalone video later, but I want to go out to phone calls and people have been holding. So let's do that. Let's go straight out to phone calls. Here it is, your final segment of The War Room. Support us, won't you, at thealexjonesstore.com. And we go first to Joe in the great USA on line one. Thanks for calling in, Joe. You're on about Mark Levin. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I don't understand how he picks on patriotic Americans like Tucker, Candace, Alex, all you guys. Has he said anything about Mom Dami at all? I mean, Mom Dami is a total lunatic hater. He seems to just attack. And I have a term. I'm sure I didn't make this up, but I have a term for people like him. I call him like an infantile mental case. you know, which is basically what most grown adults are now, especially in government. And it's just a matter of what flavor of infantile mental case can you turn out to be? And he's like the poster child for it.
You know, I you're exactly right. And it's funny because that sounds like something he would call somebody else. He's always, you're infantile, or something like that. But you're right. He is. Although I don't know. Actually, I might disagree with you because I was thinking about this today. Because we keep seeing headlines that are like, a bill passed to deny illegals getting, federal funds. And it's like, why do we even have to pass this law? And it was making me think about sort of the quotes you hear about how, you know, the closer to death an empire is, the more ridiculous its laws are. And just this idea that just goes back to sort of the central theme of all of my coverage, which is, you know, that liberty is a responsibility and that if people can't moderate themselves, then you have to have an authority come in. So if you want to avoid tyranny, then the citizenry has to be informed and moral and competent. And it's just like the central to everything going on is that everything is being infantilized, but it's not, I don't think it's because people are infants. I think it's because people are criminals. So I was thinking about this because it's like we have rules at my house that we don't have at the office, right? There are rules in my house like don't throw electronics, okay? Don't throw the phone. Just you're not allowed to do that. Now, that has to be a rule. That's a law at my house because my children are toddlers and don't know that you're not supposed to throw electronics. You don't need rules with adults who are responsible because they're not going to throw electronics anyway, so there doesn't need to be a rule, even though it's possible that one might choose to do that. But it's like, why would that need to be a rule? Here at the office, people are responsible and adult enough to know not to throw electronics. But for babies, yeah, you got to have the rule because they don't know better. But with things like giving out benefits to illegal immigrants or, you know, any of these other laws that get passed where it's like men shouldn't be allowed in women's locker rooms. It's like these things are like infantile rules. They're rules that shouldn't be necessary, but it's not because people are so dumb that they don't understand that they're not allowed to do this or like they think it's okay. It's because either you have to have rules when people are dumb or when people are evil, people are bad, when people take advantage of vulnerabilities, then you have to have rules. So it's like when Mark Levin is going crazy and saying all this stuff, it can seem infantile, but really it's just dishonest. It's not that he doesn't know better. It's that he is choosing to do something bad, to tear down, you know, the right wing and not focus his ire on the left. And to be honest, I bet he has said stuff about Mamdani. I wouldn't be surprised if he's done a lot of coverage on Mamdani, but that's not what people are seeing right now because he is hyper-focused and his main concern at this point is destroying Tucker Carlson of all people. Let's go to this clip because I have it anyway and I didn't think I was going to play it, but our caller mentioned Mark Levin. Clip 12 here. This is funny. Here's Mark Levin saying, "You're not beating me. I'm not really trying." Let's watch.
And you know, one of the defenders of Tucker Carlson said, "He's in the top 10 of podcasters. Levin isn't even the top 200. Am I a podcaster, Mr. Producer? I'm not a podcaster. So, I mean, we've got millions and millions of people in what we call radio. So I'm not a podcaster. Now, we run their show on a podcast and so forth, but that's the show we put on podcast to make it available to everybody. But if I were only a podcaster and not on radio, I'd be kicking their asses. I really would. I mean, people are going to say, well, how do you know? I just know. I just know you Levinites out there. You never know. We might do it one day. Who knows? Uh-huh. What do you want me to do, Rich? Sorry, buddy. We'll be right back.
Mark Levin.
That's Mark Levin saying that he'd kick everyone's butts if he was a podcaster. Okay, sure, bro. You do that. By the way, Alex Jones still kicks your butt on podcast, and we're also on the radio. And I bet our radio audience is bigger than yours. So what's the excuse? Now, see, he wants to downplay podcasts as if they're less respectable. He's on the radio, after all. All that means is that, you know, in reality, the distinction is podcasts have to be listened to by people choosing to listen to them. they have they're if they're popular, it's because they're good, largely. It's because people like them and are going to listen to them. To be on the radio, the only person that has to like you is the person who hired you to put you on the radio. So actually, radio is a much more like exclusionary, exclusive, controlled, managed, not you're the best because you're the most popular, or you're the, you know, you're on the radio because so many people listen to you. People listen to you because you're on the radio. It's sort of an inverted thing. He thinks he would beat, Alex Jones. And it's like, Tucker Carlson's in the top 10. No, Tucker Carlson's number one, sir. He's number one. And he was number one on national television when he did that. What's your show at? You know, Mark Levin has a television show. I have to tell you that because it's not popular. Nobody knows about it. But it doesn't matter to him. It doesn't matter to him. As long as he has the, you know, control mechanism to place himself on top, then he doesn't have to actually compete. Let's go to William in Mississippi. William, thanks so much for coming on. You're on the air.
Hey, so one guy that I highly encourage people to listen to, are you familiar with Brian McClanahan?
I'm not.
So he's I believe he's the president of the Abbeville Institute. Really goes into a lot of the founding principles of the country. And speaking of books, another great book I encourage, it's by a controversial figure, but are you familiar with the rise and fall of the Confederate government by Jefferson Davis? And all the reason I bring it up is because he goes into a lot of the more nuanced details of the country, the Constitution, and its interpretations.
I'm not familiar with that. No, that sounds fascinating, actually. So he wrote this after the end of the war?
Yeah. He wrote it after the end of the war. I believe it was published in the 1880s before he died. Seriously, if you have not read it, highly encourage. It's a little bit of a dry read, but you will be absolutely shocked by the amount of information and notes that he has in it. Honestly, people that read it, there's two volumes. But people that read it come away from it just absolutely shocked at the stuff we're not really told. And it's not even from a necessarily pro-Confederate angle. It actually goes into, like, when he served as Secretary of War, goes into the first Congress. And
yeah, unless I'm mistaken, he didn't really want to be president, right? Am I wrong about that?
Oh, yeah, no. In fact, on page 61 in the book, he actually would put his circle it, put his signature in, because 1861 was the saddest year of his life because he was nominated president of the Confederate States of America, and he had to leave Washington D.C.
Right, and yeah, he really didn't think, but you know that's what you know those guys had honor back then, right? So it was either you know when somebody called you to serve and you know appointed you president, you did your best. You got out there, and even if you didn't think, same as Robert E. Lee, right? I don't think Robert E. Lee wanted the Civil War to happen, but when it did, he was like, shoot, he left the American army and went to fight for Virginia. It's like, I guess I have to. I guess this is what I have to do. Even though he was in West Point, he was in the American army, he left it to go to Virginia because that was his duty, and he had to do his duty. And even if that meant fighting and possibly killing his old classmates, that's what he had to do. And on the other hand, you have people like Sam Houston, who was against the Civil War. Against Texas's participation in it, basically said, we just fought a revolutionary war of our own. We just joined this union. Now you want to leave it? We shouldn't do that. And when people voted against him, he said, all right, if you want to do this, I wash my hands of it. And he left and went and lived with the Cherokees and said, I'm out. You know, it's like those are the honorable options. Instead, what we have now is like, you know, if it was the modern day, Jefferson Davis would be like, well, I don't want to be president. I don't even think the Confederacy should happen. So I'm going to be president, and then I'm going to undermine the Confederacy from the inside. You know, it's like, but that didn't even occur to these guys. You either just said no and left, or you did your best, even if it wasn't, you know, what you wanted, because you had a duty to do your best. So, yeah, Jefferson Davis is a fascinating character. Thank you for those suggestions, William. I will look into both those. Owl Killer in Virginia is next on the list. Go ahead, Owl Killer. You're on the air.
Hey, well, so if you're going to play The Sopranos, you got to put the part in that episode where the guy's like, well, the Talmud says, and he goes, I don't give a F what he says.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was one of the best parts of that. Hey, so I I don't want to – I did not call in about Mark Levin, but just I want to say something real quick. 20 years in the military, we would – everywhere I went on the East Coast, all we did was listen from Alex Jones from 11 to 3 p.m., and then we would go right into Michael Savage, who they ran off of WABC, which is the same – it's 770 a.m. It's the same station that Mark Levin's on, and he always – he always knew that there was something wrong with Mark Levin. Sean Hannity, he used to call Mark Levin Mickey Mouse on Laughing Gas. You got to see his skits on Sean Hannity, the wall banger. He calls him the wall banger because he was in construction. And Rush Limbaugh. Apparently, they all had like the same lawyer. I think it was Rush Limbaugh's, or same agent. It was Rush Limbaugh's brother. But anyhow, Michael Savage always knew about him. And they ran Michael Savage, who at the time was the second biggest show to Rush on AM radio. What I did want to call in about was the what's going on. There's a popular YouTuber. Are you familiar with this guy, Jesse on Fire? He doesn't cover politics much.
I'm not, no.
All right. Well, he's more of an MMA guy. He was playing a clip of Alex Jones, like a segment that was on Twitter, and it's about a five-minute segment where Alex Jones is like, stop saying this is by mistake. This is all by design. They already own 80% of the world or 80% of the stuff in the country, but they just can't help themselves. They want to own all 100%. And what Jesse on Fire was referring, what he was saying was, we are at what's called late-stage capitalism at this point, where they're basically your generation. Look, I'm 42, man. Your generation doesn't owe us a damn thing, and you guys really don't have a future. If you think Mom, like, I'm not surprised Mom Donnie won in New York. I'm not surprised because, you know, that's New York. But if you think those ideas are going away, what my wife is originally from the Dominican Republic. And I understand the history of, like, she knows about it, like, why all the countries were communists in the 1980s inside of South America. And the reason they went communist was because we installed dictators all throughout Latin America and told them that this is capitalism. And the people were like, if that's capitalism, we want the opposite of it. What we're experiencing right now, this is not capitalism. The big thing is the people with the money are not betting on humanity. Alex is talking about the meat, the four big meat basic mafias that own the meatpacking facilities. Where are the billionaires just making the building these facilities? We can have them done in a couple of weeks if you really wanted to. Like nobody is betting down is not nobody is betting on humanity. Nobody is putting their money into the fight. But what I'm seeing is. I just was parked next to somebody in a Rolls Royce filling up their, and then I'm next to somebody that is in a car that's falling apart with windows that's being taped up. Your generation is not. You do have a bunch of communists and a bunch of misinformed people, but the vast majority of you guys are not lazy. You just don't have. You don't even have a job to like look forward to. How are you going to buy a house? These people are talking about 50-year mortgages. I really think somebody needs to come up with a plan for the future where we're like, we really going to have to liquidate a lot of this debt. It's not real. It can never be repaid. Just levy with the American people, because all we're doing is we're printing money, which initially goes to the banks, and they get it first. So yep. Their purchasing power is what it was before the money was printed. The market hasn't recognized it yet, and by the time it gets to us, the inflation is already built in, is already baked into it.
Oh, the whole thing's a scam, and it was built specifically to be a scam. Not this exactly. I talk about this.
But we're going to end up with it. We're going to end up with a communist-led revolution, we're going to end up in some type of Marxist outcome, based off of the simple fact that this cannot go on. People do not have anything to fall back on. They have nothing to look forward to. And at the end of the day, the communists are going to do what they say they're going to do. And we had a shot with the Republicans, and they squandered it. They literally squandered it.
They shut down and ignored and boxed out the economic populism that would have been a countermeasure to the promises and utopian vision of the socialists. You're exactly right. And this has been a sticking point of mine for the, you know, the entire time I've been here, because it's been the same thing the entire time I've been here. It's been the same process. You've got socialists making grand promises to take the billionaires' money and give it to you. And if that's the only promise being made, that's what people are going to go for. The point that I think needs to be made is that the reason that, because you said late stage capitalism. Now, that is a communist dog whistle, right? And I'm not claiming that you're a communist, you know, making a dog whistle, but the idea is that capitalism is a cancer that kills you. And late stage cancer is when you're dying of cancer. Late stage capitalism, they're saying capitalism is what's killing America. My argument is what's killing America is the crony capitalism, the monopolization, the, you know, amalgamation of just all of these big corporations into mega corporations. Like, this is an abuse and exploitation and a perversion of capitalism. But at the end of the day, the communism versus capitalism economic policy, I think, is another false dichotomy. Not exactly false, but the point is, when we were in the Cold War against communism, we didn't write "in capitalism we trust" on the money. We didn't change our national motto to be "in the dollar we trust." We changed it to "in God we trust." Because the real conflict is between atheistic, inhuman, exploitative communism and freedom, liberty, God, Christianity, religion. Like, that's the actual dichotomy. Capitalism is a naturally occurring consequence of freedom. When you are free, you purchase things. You buy what you want. You make deals with other people. You both feel like you benefit. With nobody else there to control you, people just do that naturally. Capitalism is a natural outgrowth of freedom. However, it can be distorted. And the goal is not like, I am a capitalist. I believe in capitalism, but I don't, but I'm, it's not a religion. I'm not like a, you know, it's not capitalism. I'm trying to combine capitalism and Christianity into a single word. It's not as easy as I thought. Capitalismanity, right? It's not my religion. It's just something that I like and I think is a good economic model, as long as it's serving freedom, as long as the capitalism and the free exchange of goods is in fact reinforcing the general freedom that it is born from. But as soon as it becomes contrary to freedom, as soon as capitalistic endeavors impose on people's freedoms, then they have to be restrained by the government. That's why we have a government, so that big groups of men can't impose themselves on other people. The government is there to make sure that doesn't happen. So, you know, using the term late stage capitalism, I don't think is an accurate one. It's not capitalism that has brought us to this point. It's the exploitation and perversion that's been allowed to happen under the name of capitalism. And in turn, it's destroyed the freedoms that is the real thing that we want, that is opposed and diametrically opposed to communism. But I appreciate the call very much, Al Killer, and I absolutely completely agree with you about everything that you said, pretty much. Thank you for the call. Let's go to William in Missouri. It's next on the line. Go ahead, William. You're on the air.
Hello. Am I on?
You are.
All right. Number one, love the show. Number two, wasn't going to talk about Mark Levin, but I feel after the first caller, I need to talk about him. And
go for it.
I'd say more than a poisonous person, he's being more of a disease. It feels like us as a movement are sick, and a big problem.
He's the germ.
He's the germ. Exactly.
He's spreading his infection. He's patient zero of this mind virus.
And the comments he said about, oh, I'm not even trying. You know who he wishes he was? He wishes he was Rush, but Rush, unfortunately, is dead. And that's how I discovered you guys.
Well, you know, I was gonna say the last caller, I remember growing up, my dad, it was Rush Limbaugh and Michael Savage. I mean, they were the dudes. Mark Levin never entered into it.
And I think the world needs a healthy dose of that.
Yeah.
If we ever want to recover.
Yeah, well, and we gotta, and again, you know, Mark Levin is just he is a poisonous force in this movement, and he's not actually a part of this movement. He has his own interests that are contrary and at odds with the interests of Americans, and he just wants to browbeat you and insult you until you stop opposing him. And that's a stupid thing to try to do to a bunch of Americans who love being opposed, who love being told what not to do, so we know what to do. It's great. It's wonderful. Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the call, William. Let's go to Eddie in Texas. Running out of time. Eddie, you're on the air.
Hey, Harrison. My second time actually calling in. I've been listening to you since the American Journal. But, yeah, I'd like to talk about the influence and the impact that us, the general public, in these days hold in the public square, you know, all thanks to X. A lot of people use X these days just for news and trends, and they kind of spread pretty fast these days. So, you know, you could be talking about one thing one day, and then the following day, it's a point of discussion. So to get to my point, my friend, let's call him Phantom, he has voiced his frustration over and over about the current direction of the country. And so I kept repeating the same thing to him. I told him, like, hey, the most effective way, in my eyes, to get actualized onto something is just to continue talking about it. Like, you got to go on X. You got to publicly shame these people. You got to meme them to death. You got to out-debate them, right, in their own posts. And you'll see that, like, the Overton window is just going to continually grow and expand. Like, people that weren't ever going to discuss topics, like, they'll eventually have no choice. Like, okay, you can't avoid this anymore. Like, you can bring, like, public discussion to this. So, sure enough, I was right. So, you know, cut to a few months later, like, you know, after that whole tirade of his, here we are, like, the talking points that he would continually, like, tell me over and over again, like, the censorship stuff that we're dealing with, Israel and Netanyahu not facing much of any accountability, Trump selling us out to...
It's known by everybody now. I'm sorry, we're coming to the end of the show. I really appreciate the call, and I'm sorry, Scott, Michael, and Undergotten, y'all call in tomorrow or if we want to take their numbers. I know Alex has started doing that. I think it's a good idea because I hate leaving people on hold. But thank you so much for the call, everybody. And you're exactly right. It, you know, this is an information war. It's an information war. And when you're on X, you're on the battlefield. And when you're in your car listening to the radio, you're on the battlefield. And when you're talking to your friends, you're on the battlefield. And just like in real war, the day belongs to those who endure it. Right? You can't be disheartened by this. You can't be frustrated and just give up on this. We're, right now, we're in sort of a, what's the term? Basically, we're just trying to exhaust each other. It's just whoever stops talking first loses. So don't stop talking. Don't stop arguing. Don't stop replying to people in their comments. It makes a difference, but everybody needs to be involved. Of course, a wonderful way to be involved is to go to thealexjonesstore.com. 2-for-1 on Shilajit gummies. Buy one, get one free. Plus, you get a free hat. Ends today at midnight. Do not wait. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. Make a purchase. Keep us on the air and win the info war. See you tomorrow, folks. I do want to tell you about a sale that we've got going on infowarsstore.com. I feel like it's been forever since I've plugged infowarsstore.com. But let me tell you, folks, I'm plugging it for a good reason because it is the final batch.
Final batch. Final batch.
Of two of our most bombshell, widely respected, well-known, and powerful supplements, Ultimate Fish Oil and Bod Ease Turmeric Supplement. And this is a critical moment. If you've been thinking about improving your health, now is the time to act, and not just for the sake of your well-being, but to help keep InfoWars on air as long as possible. For a limited time, we're offering 40% off two of our best-selling products, Ultimate Fish Oil and Bod Ease Whole Body Support. Our fish oil is packed with essential omega-3s to support your heart, brain, and joints, while our turmeric helps with inflammation and boosts your overall wellness. Both products are powerful tools in your daily health routine. But here's the reality. We at InfoWars could be shut down in the very near future. We need your support right now, and the funds from these sales are critical for keeping the fight going as long as possible. Once the supply is gone, you might not have a chance to restock or even be around for to offer these products again. We might not be around to offer these products ever again. 40% off Ultimate Fish Oil, 40% off the Bod Ease Turmeric Supplement. It is a massive discount, and it's your chance now to grab these high-quality supplements while helping us survive. Do not wait. Head to InfoWarsStore.com. Buy now and keep us going. Every purchase helps. Every order makes a difference. And like I said, these could be the final runs of Ultimate Fish Oil and Bod Ease Turmeric Supplement, two of our most powerful and beloved supplements. Please do go get Ultimate Fish Oil today at InfoWarsStore.com. Keep us on the air, in the fight, and keep yourself healthy.
Discover a wide variety of products at InfoWarsStore.com. From shirts, books, hats, survival gear to essential documentaries and supplements, InfoWarsStore.com has got you covered. We have the highest quality at the lowest prices. Visit InfoWarsStore.com and help support the InfoWar.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.